going to fly right in to Fairbanks International. We are so pumped that she's coming back home.
Governor Palin's first stop in Alaska since she became a vice presidential candidate. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, the 9th of September. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Democrats in Congress set their energy priorities.
It will come down to this when it comes to energy. Whose side are you on? The side of the American consumer and the taxpayer, or big oil?
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
First National Bank Alaska, working shoulder to shoulder with Alaskan businesses for nearly a century. Member FDIC, equal housing lender.
The judge presiding over the case against Senator Ted Stevens will hold a hearing tomorrow to go over motions filed over the last few weeks by the defense and prosecution. Alaska's senior senator faces 7 federal counts of lying on his Senate financial disclosure forms. He's accused of hiding gifts worth more than $250,000. The trial is set to begin in Washington, D.C. in 2 weeks. APRN's Libby Casey reports.
In the latest motions filed Tuesday, Senator Stevens' lawyers accuse the government of withholding material vital to the case, including grand jury exhibits and subpoenas, logs of the phone surveillance, and data that explains photographs. They also complain that when the government has handed over documents, it's been in an electronic format that's made more work for the defense team. The lawyers asked for the court's help on Tuesday to get the materials turned over, and soon, with just 2 weeks before the case begins. But late in the day Tuesday, prosecutors fought back, saying they had submitted everything relevant and, in fact, had gone above and beyond to meet Senator Stevens' call that the case be rushed. The government prosecutors said they responded to all the defense requests, including some which, quote, involve matters bordering on the frivolous. Prosecutors said they already turned over tens of thousands of documents, phone conversations, audio and video recordings, and photographs, all in reasonable standard formats. And as for grand jury exhibits and subpoenas, prosecutors say they're not obligated to hand those over. Earlier this week, the defense filed a motion asking for the medical records of VECO CEO Bill Allen, who is expected to be the main witness against Stevens. Allen suffered a head injury in 2001, which slows his speech. But prosecutors say they don't have the records, and the defense would know as much if they'd simply asked instead of involving the court. The latest back-and-forth fighting through motions piles on the work facing Judge Emmett Sullivan. Even though the trial is still on a fast timeline, the defense team has filed numerous motions in recent weeks that may slow down the proceedings, including requests to dismiss the case. And this week, prosecutors introduced new items they believe Stevens took as gifts and didn't claim on his disclosure forms, including a $3,200 stained glass window, a $2,600 massage chair, and a $1,000 sled dog, which he claimed as a gift but at a quarter of its price. They're also trying to introduce evidence that Stevens hid a $31,000 interest-free loan and that he asked Bill Allen for things of value, including a new Jeep for his daughter and jobs for his son and grandson. That's all in addition to the original charge of accepting $250,000 worth of gifts from VECO. While Stevens is not charged with bribery, prosecutors do say he did favors for VECO at the same time he was accepting gifts. The defense says that claim will prejudice the jury and should not be discussed during the trial. The defense also filed a motion last week to keep some secretly recorded phone conversations out of the case. Now it's up to the judge to sort through the motions and decide which ones have merit. In Washington, D.C., I'm Libby Casey.
The back and forth over energy continues on Capitol Hill. Today, Democratic House leaders announced their plan to lower gas prices and increase renewable energy. They're fighting back against a Republican energy package built around offshore oil drilling and opening more domestic resources, including the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. California Democrat House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said her party's plan would also increase domestic oil supply, but in a more responsible way.
This comprehensive energy legislation is, again, is a result of serious compromise among Democrats to bring down gas prices now and invest in clean, renewable future. Republicans must set aside their drill only. Even their own supporters have said we cannot drill ourselves out of this emergency situation. And it will come down to this It will come down to this when it comes to energy. Whose side are you on, the side of the American consumer and the taxpayer, or big oil?
Republicans say their energy plan does more than drill. It also offers tax incentives for conservation efforts and uses drilling revenues to start a renewable energy trust fund. Republicans began a rallying cry over the summer to drill, which gained momentum as gas prices remained high. That put the heat on Democrats to come up with their own drilling plan. While they still oppose opening the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, many Democrats are now supporting limited offshore drilling. Speaker Pelosi changed her position, saying she will allow the House to vote on offshore drilling, but only if it is tied to a broader energy package. Pelosi says she still believes drilling alone won't bring down prices at the pump.
If they want to drill offshore, we say, okay, if you want to drill in the outer continental shelf, let's have a discussion and a change of the relationship between our oil, which is owned by the American people, the desire of big oil for us to subsidize their drilling, and us not to, the American people not getting the benefit of the profits.
Pelosi says Democrats are still hammering out exactly where they would allow offshore drilling, but it would include southeastern states, including Virginia, North and South Carolina, and Georgia. The Democrats' plan would also encourage conservation, increase taxes on oil companies, and invest in green technology and job training. Meanwhile, the Senate is wrangling over energy, but a bipartisan group called the Gang of Ten is trying to gain support for its plan, which partners offshore drilling with conservation efforts. At today's press conference in the Capitol, Speaker Pelosi was asked about her take on Governor Sarah Palin's run for vice president. Pelosi is the first female speaker of the House, but she put politics and philosophy first.
I congratulate her on her historic candidacy. I completely oppose her policy, and I look forward to the election. I'm working very hard for the election of Barack Obama and Joe Biden to take our country in a new direction.
Governor Palin is the first female Republican vice presidential candidate. Palin is scheduled to be back in Alaska tomorrow. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the Alaska Republican Party is holding a campaign rally in Fairbanks to welcome her home.
It'll be Sarah Palin's first visit to Alaska since being named John McCain's running mate last month and her first solo appearance on the campaign trail. Alaska Republican Party spokesman McHugh Pierre says the governor is expected to speak for about an hour, beginning at around 7 p.m. inside a hangar at the Fairbanks Airport.
She's going to fly right in Fairbanks International, pull up to our hangar, get out, be greeted by some locals, and then come in and address the crowd. We are so pumped that she's coming back home.
It'll be a long day for Governor Palin. The McCain-Palin website has the candidate scheduled for a morning rally in Fairfax, Virginia, Wednesday. Pierre says Palin will be traveling to Alaska aboard a chartered campaign jet.
It's not a personal luxury jet. It's much like you see John McCain flying in. It's the size of a 737. It has all of her staff on there, the campaign staff. There's Secret Service on there. There's a bunch of folks involved, much more than anything we've experienced at the state level.
Pierre says the event is a fundraiser for the McCain-Palin campaign, but is open to the public. Those who want to attend are being asked to park at the Carlson Center beginning at 3:30 in the afternoon to ride shuttle buses to the rally. It's unclear where the governor will go after the Fairbanks event. Pierre says a similar rally is being considered for Anchorage, but that Palin is scheduled to be back in Fairbanks again Thursday to attend an afternoon deployment ceremony at Fort Wainwright for the 1st Stryker Brigade. The governor's 21-year-old son, Track, is part of the 4,000-member combat team, which is heading to Iraq. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a small business in Southeast gets statewide recognition.
Whenever I used to say, I'm from Pelican, people would always say, have you heard of Rosie's Bar?
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
9 out of 10 of Alaska's boating fatalities are adult males. Most drowned following an unexpected fall or capsize into cold water. Cold water can kill the unprepared, regardless of swimming ability. Wearing a life jacket can make the difference between life and death. Make your family's boating memories good ones. always wear a life jacket when boating Alaska's cold water. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
Congressman Don Young says he's not claiming victory in his tight reelection race with Lieutenant Governor Sean Parnell, although the latest vote tally from the Division of Elections gives him a 239-vote lead. But he says he's acting as if he has won the race.
I can't claim anything. I just think that it's been written in the newspapers and whereby there's only 270 votes out. Approximately, and being 239 votes, it's there, and you know, that we'd have to. I'd be very suspicious of any turnover right now.
Young says he considers the 2,300 of a percent difference by which he is now leading Parnell a major victory.
I was 25 points down. People had asked me on the quiet, why don't I resign? Why don't I not run? Let other people run. To me, this is a great victory. It was not a defeat. It was a victory because, you know, you can check your pollsters and everything else. We were in very serious shape, and yet Alaskans rose to the occasion and said, yes, Don Young can still do the job, and for that I'm very thankful.
Young says he believes that Parnell will support his candidacy as a fellow Republican, especially, he says, since he stands a good chance of being governor. He also plans to remain in Washington, D.C. until Congress adjourns. The other candidate in the congressional primary race, Gabrielle Ledoux, has offered support to both Parnell and Young, whichever comes out on top after the final votes are counted. Young says he plans to use Ledoux as an advocate for him in Alaska when he can't be in the state. Ledoux is willing to do that.
If he asks me, I'll be glad to do that. And the same goes for Lieutenant Governor Parnell, if he should end up as the victor in this race. I believe in the democratic process, and the democratic process, the people have spoken, and it's either going to be one or the other of them. And whoever it is, I will support.
In a printed release, Parnell says he is still optimistic about getting support from absentee voters whose ballots have not yet been counted, especially since he has gotten good support from the military voters within the state. Parnell says he'll consider the final margin between the candidates and then decide on whether a recount would be needed. State Elections Director Gail Fanumiai says both the final count of outstanding ballots and the certification of the election will be completed by the middle of next week. Juneau city officials reversed themselves last night. The Juneau Assembly voted unanimously against funding a life-size bronze of a humpback whale breaching above the downtown waterfront. KTOO's John Ryan reports.
The Assembly had voted 2 weeks ago in favor of spending $500,000 on the proposed $1.3 million project for the downtown waterfront. But after most of the public had left that Assembly meeting, Deputy Mayor Randy Wanamaker motioned the Assembly to reconsider the matter at a future date. Several Assembly members say they have been deluged with public comments since that night. They say the emails and phone calls have strongly opposed using city sales taxes for a sculpture. Backers of the original measure say the sculpture project would only borrow sales tax funds and repay them from cruise ship passenger fees. As the Assembly took up the bill again, Assemblyman Jeff Bush offered a substitute ordinance. It would let the city spend only marine passenger fees on the project. That way, cruise ship tourists and not local taxpayers would foot the bill. City Attorney John Hartle said the federal government strictly limits what cruise ship fees can be spent on. He said the funds could not be spent on the artistic parts of a project on a downtown seawalk.
The bronze, the reflecting pool, the pump, the lights, those, in my view, would not qualify for this. But to the extent that it's built into the seawalk, it's a part of the seawalk, I think that part would qualify.
Assemblyman David Stone said the public didn't want their taxes to go to the sculpture, but wouldn't have a problem with cruise passengers paying for it. Assemblyman Jonathan Anderson said opposition to the sculpture project was widespread and vehement.
This probably, at a different time, might be a worthwhile project. I do not think that, given the public outcry against it, it is advisable for us to go ahead with it at this time.
The Assembly rejected the substitute ordinance to fund the sculpture with cruise passenger taxes by a 5-4 vote. They then voted on the original measure to use the sales tax budget reserve for the Whale project. This time, the Assembly unanimously rejected the measure they had approved just 2 weeks before. In Juneau, I'm John Ryan.
Interior Alaska tourism economy took a hit this summer. Official numbers won't be available until next month, but reports from across the region indicate an off year. Delta Chamber of Commerce Executive Director Brenda Peterson says visitor numbers were down about 15%, but tourism-related sales were off far more.
People are, you know, buying stuff from the IGA and they eat out and those kind of things, but do without a lot of souvenir type things that they don't have to have. And our visitor center also sells merchandise, tourism related items. And the sales were down there, I would say, at least 40% this year.
Peterson says the tourist season started later than normal, but has been holding on longer this fall. Fairbanks Convention and Visitor Bureau Director Deb Hickok estimates that tourism was down between 5 and 9% this summer.
The big decline is in domestic travel, and that's where our volume of visitors comes from. Basically, most of our visitors come from the U.S. And not only do we think that most of the cruise sector is down, but also probably a decline in independents as well.
Hickok says the biggest perceived dip was in long-haul road travel to the region, but she says that's deceptive because last summer saw an exceptionally high number of border crossings. She says this summer's bright spot was an increase in international air travel to Fairbanks.
No surprise, with our weak dollar, international visitors are getting a good buy in the U.S. So one of the ups that we've seen, for example, is with our flights from Germany via Condor, which go from Frankfurt Whitehorse to Fairbanks. We have seen an 11% increase through August flights.
Hickok says Japan Airlines also carried more visitors to Alaska this summer. She says the bump in international visitation was nice, but that it only accounts for a small percentage of Alaska tourism. One of the main attractions for interior visitors is Denali National Park. Park spokeswoman Chris Pfister says early data indicates fairly flat numbers there this summer.
Our visitation statistics are only at this point verified through July of this year, and they're down slightly. They're down about 2% from the previous year. So we've seen some decrease, but not nearly as dramatic as I think perhaps been anticipated.
Denali area tourism business owners perceived a larger decline. Denali Chamber of Commerce member Neil Logman says the area saw a fair number of RV travelers, but overall numbers were down.
The consensus, I think, is about 20%. I think the independent travelers, people that were flying up, that were taking tours, the B&Bs noticed that very early on, everybody was down.
Logman says last year's release of the movie Into the Wild inspired a new crop of Christopher McCandless pilgrims wanting to hike across the Teklanika River to the Stampede Road bus where the young adventurer lived and died.
I understand that there was quite a few folks that hiked out to the Teklanika and tried to get across it. I think some of them did, some of them didn't. But thank goodness we didn't have any major mishaps. I think we had a few kids that went swimming, though.
With the summer visitor season all but over now, the industry is looking to next year. The big question statewide is how continued uncertain economic conditions in the U.S. will affect domestic tourism to Alaska in 2009.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, financial pioneers in Alaska nearly a century ago, bringing Alaskans to the next stage. WellsFargo.com, the next stage.
APRN will be providing special coverage of the 50th anniversary of Alaska statehood. For sponsorship information, call 550-8400.
The legislature's Renewable Energy Task Force held its first meeting this morning to determine how it will assess the state's energy needs and then make long-term recommendations on how renewable energy projects can help meet those needs. Anchorage Republican Anna Fairclough will chair the group. She told members this morning that they need to begin research on projects that have been successful in other Arctic regions of the world and to determine what resources are available for Alaska communities.
How do we have site-specific projects into those so that finance committee members can see those as viable options or alternatives to invest in for the state of Alaska in this coming year so that we could actually have something to show, you know, and then what's the best project in that area for consideration if we did want to establish something, and where would that benefit Alaskans most?
The task force consists of six legislators and one member of the administration, Natural Resources Commissioner Tom Irwin. The group's first report is due to the full legislature next March. Faircloth says she hopes to have a substantive meeting before the 1st of November. Bethel businesses have seen a rash of break-ins since spring. Police don't know whether it's organized thieves working together or independently. They have nabbed a few suspects, including last week. In that instance, a would-be burglar had no problem breaking into a small business, but getting out proved to be the tough part. KYUK's Shane Iverson has more on a gas station that got tired of getting ripped off.
It's a typical business day at Nicholson's Auto. Aside from the sales of gas and car repair items, Nicholson also fixes busted tires like this one. But last Thursday, it was owner John Nicholson that was doing the busting. At about 4 a.m., he was awoken from his sleep when a burglar entered his business.
Alarm went off, I bailed out of bed, looked at the video from my house, saw that he was in the office.
Nicholson had been expecting the burglar to hit. About 20 Bethel businesses have fallen victim to theft since last spring, and Nicholson's Auto was one of them. Back in June, $1,500 was swiped from the office. Nicholson said since then, he installed a door alarm and rigged it to notify him in his nearby house. He says when the burglar hit, his Rottweiler was ready too.
I just grabbed my big dog and my gun.
As Nicholson entered his business, his wife was able to monitor the burglar's movements through video surveillance.
I knew where he was at. My wife was watching from home as I came over. I could come in and apprehended him in the act.
Nicholson said he snuck up on the burglar from behind and held him at gunpoint until the police arrived. There, Roy Roger Tom, age 20, was arrested and charged with burglary. Tom had just been released from jail on another attempted robbery. That one took place at the ONC Rippey's building back in late July. Nicholson said he recognized Tom from a month ago when he first set up his cameras.
And I've got pictures of him sitting at my desk at 5:30 in the morning. And nobody could identify him at that time. And when he came in this time, we were able to compare the two, and it was the same fellow.
Nicholson recommends that small business owners invest in camera surveillance. He said it cost him just $1,200. He adds that a door monitor is also a good way to know if someone has entered during closed hours. He says that's very inexpensive.
Like $100 and a little $50 box to call out on the phone.
Bethel police are still investigating Tom and say he could be involved with other break-ins. I'm Shane Iverson.
The Alaska Small Business of the Year Award will go to a very small but very well-known business in Pelican, a town of about 163 people. As KUAC's Bonnie Sue Hitchcock reports, the Bill Bivens Small Business of the Year Award from the State Chamber of Commerce has been awarded to Rose Miller of Rosie's Bar and Grill.
Rose Miller has been running Rosie's Bar and Grill in Pelican for 35 years.
I can't believe they picked me. I don't feel like I'm as qualified as those rich people.
But Kathy Wasserman begs to differ. Wasserman is executive director of the Alaska Municipal League, and she nominated Rosie for the award.
I noticed that on this award, it was always given to, you know, big businesses from larger communities. And the criteria, I was looking at it one day, and it said, you know, you bring economic development to your community, and you volunteer, and the first thing that popped into my mind, I thought, well, this is Rosie to the nth degree.
Wasserman says Rosie not only volunteers her time, but Rosie's Bar and Grill is the pulse of Pelican.
The entire town goes down to the bar, and Rosie puts on a huge feed. Everybody in town spends the whole holiday together in the bar. And every time a fisherman has gotten in trouble and maybe been removed from his boat for whatever reason or missed his boat, Rosie has always been willing to put that person to work in her bar to work off their flight home.
There's so many people that can't afford to go to the bars. And during the fishing season, I had a big dinner party for all the fishermen that didn't do so good. They lost their gear, or they didn't catch anything, or the fishing game confiscated their fish or whatever.
Besides running the bar and grill, Rosie was on the school board and the police health board. She also volunteered with the fire department and taught Sunday school for a few years. She says while almost all the other businesses in Pelican will close for the winter, or in the case of the grocery store, cut back to 3 days a week, she'll stay open 7 days a week year-round.
Because people won't have any place to go to for to eat or to have a drink. I try to make all my payments in the summer, and our fuel is $6.76 a gallon now, and it'll be $7 a gallon with tax, so we're chopping a lot of wood right now for the fireplace.
Wasserman says to have the Businesswoman of the Year come from a town with just over 100 people is pretty remarkable. But what's more remarkable is how well Rosie's Bar and Grill is known outside of Pelican and even outside of Alaska.
Whenever I used to say, I'm from Pelican, people would always say, have you heard of Rosie's Bar? You know, like, first of all, like, we haven't. Of course we have. But Rosie's Bar is sort of what makes Pelican stand out. I have been as far as Portland, Oregon, and seen a car on the highway in downtown Portland that had a Rosie's Bar sign on the bumper.
And it's not just the average fisherman or Pelican Boardwalk boogie goer that frequents Rosie's Bar and Grill. Rosie says she's met a lot of Alaska's politicians when they come through on the campaign trail, and apparently she's made an impression on them as well.
There was a lot of powerful letters that were written for me from Sheffield and Senator Stevens and other people. I didn't know anything about it till after after everybody voted for me, I guess.
Kathy Wasserman says Ted Stevens wrote a letter of support for Rosie's nomination when she first told him that she'd thrown Rosie's name into the ring. Wasserman says she knew that Alaska's congressional delegation all knew and loved Rosie's Bar.
When I would go back to Washington, D.C. to lobby for Pelican, you know, you usually only get about 10 or 15 minutes with the senator or whatever, or Don Young, and I would sit down with them, and they'd spend a whole 15 minutes telling me about the last time they were in Rosie's Bar. So, and then they'd say, oh, your time's up.
Past winners of the Bill Bivens Small Business of the Year Award include the Alaska Brewing Company in Juneau, Allen Marine and Arrowhead Transfer in Sitka, Usabelli Coal Mine in Healy, Alaska Electric Light and Power in Juneau, and the Great Alaska Bowl Company in Fairbanks, to name a few. In Sitka, I'm Bonnie Sue Hitchcock.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Shane Iverson in Bethel, John Ryan in Juneau, and Bonnie Sue Hitchcock in Sitka, not Fairbanks. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Fite. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. John Profit is our webmaster. Our managing editor is Duncan Moon. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by BP, where now and in the future it's a priority to hire qualified Alaskans first. Miss our newscast today? Listen to APRN's Alaska Morning News, Economic Report, and News Nightly on the web at APRN.org.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.